Hello, friends and folks, and welcome back to Scanline Media's Gimmick Awards. We're wrapping up 2019 because it's 2020, so it's about time. And we're going to nominate, you know, an award. I mean, listen, I'm pretty sure this isn't going to be the first podcast. You know the deal by now. We're here this time to talk about Best New Character. I'm Six Detmar.
And I'm Jennifer Uncle.
I thought at first that this wasn't a great year for characters, but we've thrown together a list, and this list seems like it has a lot of people on it. So I guess there's stuff to talk about.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I feel like it got... When we were making this list initially, we put it to the side because there were other categories we wanted to focus on, and I wouldn't say... This year it's harder to just think of a character, I think of best character for 5 or 10 seconds and go, oh, hey, this person's good. But if you spend a little more time just thinking it out, there are some good choices here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we definitely have some good options. Can you run down our list for us, Jen?
Sure thing. So we have Polaris from Control, Emily Pope from Control, Veronica from Dragon Quest XI, Parvati from The Outer Worlds, V from Devil May Cry 5, and for Fire Emblem Three Houses, we have Bernadetta, Felix, and Edelgard. We have Kaido from Judgment, Baba from Baba Is You, The Goose from Untitled Goose Game, Aiba from AI The Somnium Files, Bede from Pokemon Sword and Shield, The Mayor from Wadham, and Zagreus from Hades.
All right. I hate to just go in, like, knives out right off the bat, but, like, is Baba a character?
I'd say Baba is more of a cutesy avatar slash good joke, because... A lot of people made some clever jokes with Baba is that syntax and then swapping it with something else out at the end. And doing it with this cutesy, simplistic sheep made it pretty funny. And kind of like, oh, hey, Baba, that's a fun character. But that's the extent of Baba's character, so it probably isn't much of a character at all.
Yeah. No, I mean, I appreciate that people thought the title Baba Is You was meme-worthy, but that's about, you know, that's this. It's not actually about Baba.
I mean, you are getting Baba to the goal every time, so it slightly is about Baba, but not to the degree other games are about characters in a video game.
It's just that people thought the title was funny. I mean, and the art style. It's Baba as a character is not relevant to that equation.
That's fair.
Okay, we got 3 Fire Emblem characters here. I think Felix is the weakest of the 3, personally.
Really? Okay. How come?
Because he's just an angsty sword boy, which I've seen a billion times.
I guess he does fit into that mold pretty well. Like, if I were to sit down and explain what makes him special to me, it'd be sort of like, has a bad attitude and stuff, but warms up and actually cares about the people he has a bad attitude towards. But that's literally every other character that's like him, so...
And I also feel like, and all due respect, a lot of your appreciation for Felix is fan comics and stuff after the fact that decided he was gay.
Yeah, that might be part of it. I've read a lot of... Pulling the curtain back here a little bit, I guess. I've read a lot of Felix slash Sylvain or Felix slash whatever fanfics people have written where, or just fan art people do, because people like to ship the angsty sword boy with other less angsty sword boys, or occasionally spear boys. But yeah, at some point I think either you or Kyrie or one of our friends said, oh, you totally would have been a Naruto slash Sasuke person if you were paying attention to Naruto when that was going on. And yeah, that's It probably is that same character. Or that same character dynamics going on.
That was not me, but I can see it. Yeah. Felix is Sasuke. I can agree with that. I don't know, who would you cut here? As ever, I'm going hard because I don't like things, but you know.
If we're going to focus first off on I'm trying to figure out whether I should do the easier cut here or the one that would be slightly mean but would get into a discussion. Much in the same way that Baba doesn't have a lot of things to say or anything like that. Polaris is mostly a silent... Oh,
you've gotta be fucking kidding. You're kidding me with this one, right, John?
I decided I would poke the bee's nest for this one.
Okay, Polaris is my winner for this category, and also probably for the decade. Polaris absolutely has a character, and it's, I mean, one, of course, I have a deep personal attachment because Polaris helped me understand parts of NB identity, in, like, real ways. Like, Polaris helped put into context the way I was not necessarily doing a great job of treating my body, in a way that's really important to me. But also, just, I mean, like, Polaris is... not like I you know, Polaris doesn't necessarily have lines of dialogue, and I can understand that, but the fact that despite that it's really obvious what Polaris is about, I think is really powerful. The way that, because of how people react to Polaris and Polaris's like representation in the environment and role in the story, even without ever speaking, you know exactly what Polaris is and what they're like, I think is really, really powerful. I think Polaris is easily the strongest character on this list.
Okay, in that case, we can cut Emily Pope then, since we're trying to focus on having one character for each game. And
yeah, it would be weird to have a top three where two characters were from the same game, probably.
Yeah, and I do like Emily Pope. Like, she gets very nerdy about things that are kind of scary and supernatural a little. And she just presents that with total confidence. And when she mentions how Dr. Darling kind of overlooked what she had to say, it does seem like she's the smarter of those two characters. But yeah, Polaris is really important to you, and Polaris is a cool character, so I'm cool with Polaris staying and Emily Pope going.
All right, well, for being nice, I guess I can cut V from Devil May Cry 5. I think the later half of the game doesn't do V a lot of credit. I think V makes a really strong first impression, because V as a character is extremely, like... So people have been calling Dante a Molgoth for years, and finally the team over at Capcom was like, no, you idiots, this is what a Molgoth looks like. Here's V. This is a real Molgoth. He's like a rail thin kid in black clothes who dyes his hair and is covered in stupid tattoos and reads poetry during a fight. He's the worst. It's so good.
He has
he's
a sword
insufferable.
Cane.
He has a sword cane. He's got like a pet, like he summons demons, but he himself just sucks. And like most of the, like, you know, everybody else gets cutscenes where they're like, you know, Nero's like, you know, catching a, like punching a bus, or like Dante is, you know, like, cutting a building in half. And V's cutscenes are him like having a coughing fit and falling down because the game wants you to know, like, no, this guy really sucks. I do think the end of the game, the reveal of what's going on with V is not what I wanted, and it does undermine the character a lot. But at least as far as first impressions, it's hard to do better than V, a character who has a dedicated button for reading old English poetry. Does it get better than that?
Totally. And it does suck that he exists in the service of another character. And that's basically his all. That's his whole arc. But the time you get to spend with him.
Not a character I like very much. So, and not a character I like very much either.
Yeah, that character's an asshole. And not an entertaining asshole, just kind of. Well, I guess I can't talk too much about it if we're gonna.
Keep this spoiler free. There's no need for us to spoil it here. I don't know. Maybe it's possible that in Game of the Year discussions we'll get there, but just here it's like, no, that they don't. I don't think they stick the landing with V.
Totally. If we're going to cut characters that are in games but don't have much personality aside from player-driven personality within the game itself, maybe we should look into cutting the Goose from Untitled Goose Game.
So it seems to me, and I don't know if the Goose makes the final list, but it seems to me, Jen, that you are biasing really heavy towards written dialogue and not respecting necessarily the other parts of the game. I think Untitled Goose Game is a game about the personality of the Goose, the actions available to you, the objectives that you have, and just the things that, like, the game is saying, this is what the Goose would do, is the character of the Goose. The fact that the Goose is the fucking animal that's going to go through an entire village causing havoc just so it can steal their fucking bell on their model village and destroy everything. Like, I feel like that tells you a lot about the Goose.
True, yeah, that final reveal where you realize the place where you started is evidence of everything you've done in the everything this character has done in the past is pretty good.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know if the Goose makes the top three. If you want to cut it here, I get it. But I want to push back on the idea that it's like, well, if they don't speak, they don't have a character. The Goose absolutely has a character. The Goose is just like, the Goose is not specifically like a goose from real life. It's specifically like geese from like YouTube and like vines. It's the goose that we've all seen. Like, most geese are, like, kind of ornery, but it's fine. But then you get those geese that are like, I've decided I'm going to destroy your truck. And you're like, what the fuck, man? And that's the Untitled Goose Game Goose.
Yeah, and there's even that nice moment at the pub where you go up to a lesbian couple and they're way into you. And the two of you seem to have the three of you seem to have a very happy relationship together, just in terms of you entertaining them and them being nice to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a sign that maybe the Goose is responding to negativity in their environment, and if you're a good person, the Goose will leave you alone. Then again, does really fuck with that kid, and that kid didn't seem to be doing anything wrong.
True. Oh, stealing his glasses and locking him in a garage. It's all pretty cruel.
Then again, I do think probably not making our top. So from Fire Emblem Three Houses, between Bernadetta and Edelgard, I think the game invests a lot in Edelgard. But I also think it kind of does Edelgard a disservice in some routes where they aren't able to engage with her politics because she has to be the villain. The game as a whole, I don't think does that. I mean, like, cause there are multiple routes and there are routes where you get to really flesh out what her deal is in ways that are interesting, but that there are so many routes where she just gets reduced to being a cartoon villain. I think does the character a disservice, and ultimately I would take Bernadetta over her.
Mm-hmm. And Bernadetta feels more relatable as a person, like her specific character as a shut-in who likes escaping into fictional worlds, either ones that she's reading of her own or are of her own making, is very relatable. And the way that she time skips into someone that's slightly more confident and comfortable with herself is very good.
I really, I know you played it in English, and that's your call, but I would recommend looking up some of the like lines with Bernadetta in Japanese. You know that new account that's been going around of like inhuman anime girl sounds? She could run that by herself.
Oh yeah, I've seen clips of her exclamations in Japanese, and it's very entertaining.
She's great. She's a very entertaining, anxious mess. And I'm a big fan.
Okay. Trying to think of.
So, this is, I think, the only part of these awards where Wadham is going to get any respect. Not that I hate Wadham, but, well, we don't need to have this conversation right now. But there's not much to the mayor.
There is that one bit where he puts on a fedora and becomes a hard-boiled detective who responds to everything with meh and shrugging his shoulders while he's still doing nice things like bringing a lost family together. But yeah, most of his character is just, I'm going to lift my hat up and cause an explosion, and through my explosions I will bring people together.
Yeah. Yep.
It does kind of get to what you were saying earlier with the goose, where not having a lot of dialogue doesn't necessarily mean you don't have much to your character. But since Wadham is kind of a children's game in terms of its structure and tone, he definitely feels like a simplified character, especially since he's one of many characters you control, and it doesn't seem to put much of an emphasis on him aside from him being the first character you control.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that.
The rest of these are difficult. Like, I like all of these characters that we have listed here now.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say we could cut Veronica if you wanted, but you also played a fair bit of Dragon Quest XI, so you probably also like Veronica.
Yeah, Veronica's great. She's the very first time you meet her, she's instantly ordering people around and has a pretty strong will, despite having been shrunk into a child's body like right before you got there. And she takes the lead in many occasions after that. And there's this amazing moment around the time when you're in the Venice-style city, I think, where... what's the guy's name? Silvando.
Silvando?
Yeah, Silvando. Yeah. Does an accusatory point and orders someone around and uses honey in the sentence. And then she pops up too, does the same pose, and has a bit of trouble getting the word honey out, but when it does, it's with full force and conviction. And it's nice how quickly she grows on everyone in the cast, and also grows on you.
It's great because she's this character where, like, okay, so she was, like, kind of like a hotshot mage who had her age sucked away, and now she looks like she's a little kid. Because Dragon Quest is generally not that game. There are parts where it's that game, but generally not that game. The game doesn't make this creepy. It's just like, okay, here's Veronica. She looks small. It's fine. But also, like, she wants to, like, she pretty early on makes peace with, like, oh, I guess I'm not going to get my looks back. I'm going to stay looking small. And she's like, okay. And then she just moves on with it. Like, I feel like a lot of other games would have, like, you know, in between, you know, like, quest dialogue where she's just like, it's just so hard being small. But she's just fine. She's just fucking rolling with it. She's like, all right, I can still blow shit up. Who fucking cares?
She takes every challenge she faces with stride. And that's so refreshing, especially for a female character in a JRPG.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like her a lot. I think looking at this list, she's top four for me. I don't know if she's top three, but I guess
I'll make it easier. We can cut Aiba.
Okay.
Like, I like Aiba a whole lot. That's one of the that's one of the stronger points of AI, the Somnium Files. She is your artificial left eye, I believe, or right eye. It doesn't matter. But she's an artificial eye that when she pops out of your eye socket, she takes the shape of a little gelatinous teddy bear. And she also broadcasts herself as a taller woman when she's in your head and stuff like that. But she's just generally a fun shitster, rabble-rouser kind of character who also happens to have slightly better judgments than your character, Kaname Date. And
isn't she the one who makes bad memes all the time?
Only when you're making the bad choices in the dreams. But out of that, there's not much of that. So it seems like... But yeah. But there is that one really good clip I showed you where she just confidently backs up a forklift into the ocean. I feel like that one stands pretty strongly.
Okay, fair enough. There's not much about that game I find salvageable, but she seemed fun enough.
For sure.
I feel like BD is a character that gets kind of squandered.
I agree. Like, I had a lot of fun with BD. They're a good antagonist to make up for the fact that Hop isn't that antagonistic. And he's very full of himself and is constantly smirking even as he throws Pokemon in your way that you easily take out. And then he throws a little temper tantrum about it. But, I do kind of like the way that the fairy gym leader swoops in and is like, "Oh, this kid is perfect. I'm gonna make him into a star." That whole segment is amazing, but it's a shame to watch all of the characters that are recurring characters slowly disappear in that game as the story decides, okay, you've had enough of them, and we kind of want to keep things rolling, even though it makes the story a bit flat overall.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it would have been I don't want to backseat develop too much, but it seems like you totally could have done a thing where, like, BD, like, now has, like, the fairy gym leader's endorsement, and, like, she's following him around and bossing him around, but he's still trying to, you know, be a participant in the story in the meantime, instead of him just disappearing and then showing back up for, like, one last fight. It does him a real disservice.
Mm-hmm. It speaks to a larger problem with the game itself, where the whole structure feels like it's squandering each and every character it introduces, but,
yeah.
BD's a fun character. It's fun to have a boy who wears pink and focuses on fairy types, and it doesn't feel like they're making... It doesn't feel like they're making a gay joke or anything like that. He just seems like he's owning and rocking what his style is. And that's awesome to see.
Alright, so we're down to Polaris, Veronica, Parvati, Bernadetta, Kaito, and Zagreus. I feel like Zagreus is really, like, really well written. I like Zagreus a lot, but if I'm putting Zagreus up against these other characters, kind of just a rebellious kid.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, I think he's really good, but I understand, like, you know, if I was making this list by myself, maybe he'd make the top three, but I'm not, and therefore, you know, I kind of have to make concessions. So if you're not feeling Zagreus as much, I could cut Zaggy.
I do like him a whole lot, too. Like, it's hard enough to write a character like that well, but writing one well and also having him star in a roguelite. Like, roguelites aren't exactly a genre known for particularly deep or noticeable storytelling. And he manages to be a character where he has a ton of lines anytime you notice anything, and he's always fun to listen to as he's commenting on things or just going over to pet his trusty dog, Cerberus.
And he's this, like, smarmy, but likable jock in a way that's really fun. Where, like, I mean, he's not a genius, but, like, he's decently smart, but at the end of the day, he is still just like, well, I just gotta hit things, right? And, like, he has some great conversations. He's really, like, when you meet up with bosses in the bar after runs, where you've beaten them but then fallen, he's just so awkward, or he's just like, hi, I didn't expect to, hi. He's got his little, like, mate verbal tic, which is really cute. And just, he takes, like, you know, he doesn't like losing, but the fact that he takes it sort of in stride and he has something to say about stuff. There's even the fact that he has, there's the bed in his room, and except for, like, one story instance where you use it, you can walk up to it and interact with it, and he's like, listen, if I lie down, I'm not getting back up. And you're like, I hear that, man.
He's the spoiled son of the big boss of all the underworld, and despite that position, he goes out of his way to be nice to pretty much everyone, or at least a smarmy kind of bud nice, where he'll rib people, but everyone seems to be taking it in good stride.
If Achilles thinks you're okay, you're probably okay.
Exactly. and it's fun to watch him slowly realize as well that, oh, hey, it's really nice that all these gods are appearing to give me aid, but they also seem to be playing both sides, and it's that slow realization where, of course, we as the audience know going in that the gods, the Olympus gods kind of suck, and they are known for doing terrible things. And it's nice to slowly see Zagreus realize, these people are being nice to me, and that's kind of weird.
The only one who's on the level is Artemis, because every time you talk to Artemis, Artemis is like, listen, I'm helping you out because I genuinely like you. All my family fucking sucks. And you're like, hell yeah, Artemis. And then every time you get a blessing from someone else, when you have Artemis, everyone else is like, wow, you found Artemis? She won't talk to us. We don't know why. Like, I bet I can guess.
Indeed.
Yeah, I do like Zagreus a lot. I don't like any of the cuts I'm going to have to make at this point, but I do think, like all Fire Emblem Three Houses characters, Bernadetta does suffer for the fact that they can't do too much character development, right? Because you still have to be able to do all those old social links, not social links, all those supports after the time skip, and so they have to make sure she doesn't make too much growth as a character. And that kind of sucks.
Oh, that's not how I had experienced the social links myself. I noticed that there were several that I didn't get to before the time skip, and after the time skip it was like, oh, you can't do this anymore. But,
Interesting. There were...
I do agree with your general assertion, though, that, I think it's also the fact that they're dealing with so many characters and from three discrete houses and three discrete, well, four if you count the secret route with Edelgard, but yeah.
Well, it's still the same house.
For sure. But yeah, they have three distinct houses, three distinct character groups and routes, and the fact that they have to make some of the fact that it has to be, the way that it's designed puts player choice over the story in some regards, just in terms of it's totally feasible to move a lot of those characters from house to house, and it doesn't make much of a difference in their personal stories.
Yeah, that too. That's a good point.
So, yeah, Bernadetta and the other Fire Emblem characters are handicapped in that regard. Or they are disadvantaged in that regard.
Now, if she'd made it into Smash, then we could talk. But I mean, I guess she is in the background, I think, but
yeah, what would Bernadetta's smash be? Like, the final smash anyway, would it be something with a quill, or would it be with her bow and arrow?
I think she would just run into a room and shut the door, and the moment she opened it, everyone would be dead.
That's a good one. Okay.
Down to five.
I'm comfortable cutting Parvati. Like, I think that what she does is A, important in terms of having an ace character in a major RPG. I think that her whole side arc is something that I've literally never seen in a video game before, where, a video game of that type. Like, with American RPGs, you have a situation where, okay, we have all these party members, and most of the time, those party members are, if they have some sort of relationship with you, it's oftentimes in a romantic regard. But with Parvati, it's just, you get this amazing side mission that I wrote about on our website, where she's basically hitting it off with someone else, and you get to go to a bar with her and talk it through with her, and that's an amazing experience. It's awesome to be able to do all the right things when helping this character out. And I wish there were more of that in games. But
would you take Veronica and Kaito over her?
So the other thing about Parvati, she is kind of a centrist in the worst way possible. Like, the very first mission that you do with her, where she gets into your party, where you find her, basically, is in the very first town. Spacer's Choice is running, where they have this grueling factory situation, and when you're talking with her, she's very much on the side of, she's on the side of either going straight down the middle or taking the power away from the rebels and diverting it back to the company town where this asshole is running things and people are having a miserable life there. It's mostly because it's what she's comfortable with, having been born and raised in that situation, but also her father died in that environment, and it's one of those situations that's like, come on, can't you understand that this is a terrible situation? But yeah, it's... It speaks to larger problems with the Outer Worlds, where despite the way that it's been marketed or the way some websites have talked about it being some amazing DSA-style push for workers' rights and stuff like that, it still is largely something that is most comfortable with the middle ground, and Parvati suffers from that.
That's a bummer.
Indeed.
Okay. So, I didn't get far enough in Judgment. Tell me about Kaito, please.
Okay, so Kaito is, when you get to the point, like within the very first 10 or 15 minutes where you're running the detective agency, Kaito is your right-hand man. He's the one that's slightly stronger with you than you. He has some history with the same Yakuza gang that ended up getting you basically a law degree. And his whole thing is that he was, like, aside from being a very friendly, sort of personable character that he just seems like a fun person to hang out with, he also has this backstory where the reason why he's ex-Yakuza is that he was framed for a robbery that happened while he was on duty in the Yakuza office. And at that during that time, it was basically a power move because you were the, because Kaito was the most likely person to succeed, the head of the family, but the person that you run into a bunch of times and turns out to be a complete monster, ended up framing him in this way and then killing the robber a few days later when things were more in the basically so that the robber couldn't get caught and reveal that it was all set up to get Kaito framed.
Sure.
So there are strong themes of you and Kaito putting this mystery back together, though Kaito himself has this interesting sort of, I think what makes Kaito an interesting character is that he's not happy about the fact that you're digging into this, even though he was the one that was framed. He's taken it that he was thrown out of the family. It's a sore spot for him, and anyone looking into it without him being involved makes him kind of angry. And it's basically this thing where it was such a humiliating, upsetting moment for him that he doesn't even like thinking about it. So Yagami and Kaito butt heads a few times in interesting ways. Like, their friendship isn't perfect, even though the two of them get along fairly well. And it's interesting to see how his backstory or slash tragedy isn't entirely neat, as you would expect in certain, like, sometimes when you're dealing with a side character like Kaito, it would be a bit more clean cut than how it's presented, but I feel like they do a very good job with him.
Yeah, the idea that he, like, he has, you know, he knows sort of, like, he knows he was framed, obviously, but he's still like, hey, just leave it the fuck alone, man. That's really interesting, and I think that's a really cool detail to that character.
Yeah.
We're at four. I mean, who would you cut? Veronica?
I guess so. I haven't played through the entirety of Dragon Quest XI, so I'm not familiar with the twists that Tim Rogers kept referring to, or how Veronica might relate to it, but
I know what the twist is. I don't think it reflects that much on Veronica.
Okay. But yeah, it's one of those situations where it does feel like at a certain point she floats in the background to more of the larger story going on. And okay, with some of these other characters, that doesn't happen so much.
Yeah, I think she's disadvantaged by being a Dragon Quest character, honestly, because, like, I like that game a lot, but Dragon Quest is pretty light by design, and so those characters aren't going to get, like, the most development in the world.
For sure.
Okay, well, we're down to our three, then. We have Polaris, Kaito, and Zagreus. I feel like Kaido's number three.
I'd say that's a fair placement, yeah.
Okay. Now the question is, does my love of Polaris push over Zagreus, who we both like? And the answer might be no. I just want to know how you feel here.
So I'm feeling bad about having challenged you earlier regarding Polaris. It felt like a point where it was like, okay, I felt like it was on the same track as our discussion to go ahead and challenge Polaris just to get a interesting conversation going. But I am totally fine with Polaris being number one here. I think Polaris means a whole lot to you personally, and you wrote that amazing article about that character. I think the character, I think Remedy does a whole lot with that character, much more than I ever expected when we first get introduced to them like, for a good quarter of the game, I thought that that character was just representing the player character that Jesse was talking to. And They do in some regards, but that initial impression feels like more of a fake-out, because as you learn more about Polaris, they do have an interesting backstory in their own regard, and that seems like such a achievement, considering how they only appear as a bizarre yet enticing series of shapes within Jesse's head and sometimes in the world itself. It's one of the strongest elements of writing in that whole game, and that game is one of Remedy's strongest stories, so I'm totally comfortable with them sitting at the top here.
I feel like I very often want to, like, to try and, you know, push back and be like, well, let's try and, like, personal faves should be on the list, but, like, generally, I want, you know, like, the top to be something we both agreed on, but, yeah, Polaris meant a lot to me, and so if you're okay with it, I would happily take Polaris here.
Yeah, I'm more than okay with it. I like Polaris a whole lot, too, and the fact that it made you my best friend, it got so much emotion out of you, and it was someone you could relate to in a media where you don't relate to a lot of characters, at least not on that level. That that means enough to me to be number one, I think, too.
Well, thank you. All right. Well, then I think we can do Polaris number one, Zagreus number two, Kaido number three. Come from behind win for Zagreus, honestly.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where Hades is one of Supergiant's best games, and that shows in all of the characters, but especially Zagreus. If I wanted to make this list a single entry longer, I might have thrown in Dusa, but I wasn't too confident about whether Dusa would be considered a original character, since she's basically Medusa, except a much shyer version.
As far as personality-wise, she's definitely someone else.
Yeah, true. And there are more than one Gorgon in... There is more than one Gorgon in Greek mythology.
Mm-hmm. Maybe she's a Medusa head from Castlevania. I never heard those talk. Maybe that was their personality the whole time.
you never saw Dusa talk?
No, the Medusa heads from Castlevania. Oh. Maybe they were also like, oh, Richter, it's great to see you. Let me just bump into you and knock you down these stairs.
Yeah, the thing with Castlevania is that they fly towards you while Dusa flies away.
That's a great point. That's a great point. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if Dusa would have made the list. Maybe, as you say, maybe like a number four in our hearts. Dusa was great, but. Though, actually, here's the thing. Here's the secret. We didn't put Dusa on this list, right? Which means technically Dusa is available next year. And there was an update that came out 2 days ago for Hades that added new Dusa content, is what I've been told. So.
Oh, hell yeah.
So. You gotta get another shot, Dusa. Maybe not. Maybe we'll... You know what'll probably happen is we'll get to Best New Character next year and we'll be like, that's cheating. We obviously can't do that. But for the moment, let's keep the dream alive. Those are your top three, folks. Thank you so much for joining us for another Gimmick Award category. We're just about done with the Gimmick Awards. We're just about done getting through all of these categories and all of these wonderful games from 2019. Good year. But I guess I don't get to say that yet. We haven't done Game of the Year yet. Jen, would you take it away for our plug zone?
Sure thing. I'm at JBU3 on Twitter. Most of my stuff is on patreon.com/scanlinemedia or scanlinemedia.com. Let's see. Is it going to be... Oh yeah, it will be up by the time this goes up. We do have a new episode of Novel Not New, a True End podcast, which you can find at readinggames.online. And that's sort of an interval episode as we work on... as we basically get back into the groove of things. And Yeah, we're excited that... Well, I'm excited at least that the show's getting back up and running.
I hate it. I'm so mad. I can't believe we're making content again on the internet. Yeah, I know. I'm also here for it. I am at SixDetmar on Twitter, SixDetmar, which makes sense because that's my name. You can also find me on Scanline Media and on patreon.com/scanlinemedia. So, you know, all the good shit. Hopefully by the time this goes up, I think we'll probably have our personal lists up so you can check out what I've decided my Game of the Year stuff is. I'm holding on to it until after we record our Game of the Year podcast for Scanline, because I don't want Jen to prepare arguments against me. I want ambush strats. Because listen, we've been pretty civil in these awards so far, but when it comes to Game of the Year, I'm going to be mean. I'm going to be a bully.
All right. That's only fair because I feel like I came in a little too harsh with Polaris this time.
No, listen, you just wanted to have the conversation. That's valid. Yeah. I was perfectly comfortable pushing back and be like, you're out of your goddamn mind. So it's fine.
Yeah.
All right. Well, folks, until next time, peace out.
See ya.